This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Set your mind back this week. It's 20 years ago, October 1993. The superconducting collider, aiming to be the most powerful atom smasher, is on the verge of being canceled. In a last-ditch effort to explain why it would be an important research tool, scientists hope that an expensive project would become more than just a bedtime story. It's this week's Radio Rewind.
Uncle Ira, tell us a story, please. Oh, please.
Okay. One quick story, and then it's bedtime.
We want to hear the story of the unified theory again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, settle down. Here we go. Once upon a time, scientists believed that everything was made up of atoms. There were carbon atoms and oxygen atoms, hydrogen atoms.
And molybdenum.
Who's telling this story?
Sorry.
Okay. Anyway, the scientists thought that these atoms were the smallest building blocks of everything in the whole world. Tables and chairs, tomatoes and kumquats, kitty cats and talk show hosts were all made up of atoms. And they thought that the atom was the smallest thing there was.
But what about the nucleus?
Well, I'm getting to that part. Just wait. By about 1930, scientists figured out that atoms were made up of protons and neutrons and teeny-weeny little electrons.
In a cloud.
What's in a cloud?
Well, the electrons. They're in a cloud around the nucleus.
Hey, what school do you go to, kid? Bronx Science?
Get to the part about the quarks.
Okay. Well, the scientists built these huge particle accelerators. They're like big racetracks that protons zip around and around in.
Wow.
Going faster and faster until finally they smash into one another and explode in a whole bunch of new particles, even smaller than protons.
Yeah, like quarks.
Right, like quarks. And muons and gluons and leptons.
But what about the unified theory?
All right, hold your horses. Now, the scientists found six different kinds of quarks.
Nuh-uh.
What do you mean, uh-uh?
Well, they didn't see the top quark.
Well, that's right. That's why they want to build the superconducting supercollider. Maybe then they'll catch the top quark.
When are they going to build it?
Well, the Senate's supposed to vote on it later this month. Did you write your senator, Uncle Alphonse and Uncle Pat?
I sent them email.
Figures. All right, it's getting late. Let me finish the story. Now, there are four forces that hold all these particles and everything together. The strong force,
yeah.
The weak force, the electromagnetic force.
And gravity.
Right, gravity. Anyway, scientists think that this standard model is okay, but it's kind of clunky. Some scientists think that they can come up with a theory that will bring all the forces together. This way, they can explain everything around us in a really simple, neat way.
Can they do that, Uncle Ira?
Well, we'll have to see. Now, it's time to go to sleep. Get into bed. Sweet dreams.
Will scientists get the SSC and find the top quark? Is the standard model really the bottom line? And can physicists ever come up with the granddaddy of them all, the unified theory of everything? These are some of the questions we'll be tackling this hour. Let me introduce my guest this hour. Dr. Leon Lederman, professor of science at the Illinois Institute of Technology and director emeritus of the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory. Winner of the 1988 Nobel Prize in Physics, he is the author of The God Particle, written with Dick Teresi and published by Houghton Mifflin. Leon Lederman joins us by phone from his office at Fermilab in Batavia. Nice to have you with us again, Dr. Lederman.
Hi. Now that we're on, the rest of the audience can go to sleep.
Well, we'll see how well you can do. Your reputation is at stake. Let me also bring on Dr. David Lindley. He is a senior editor at Science Magazine and author of The End of Physics, The Myth of Unified Theory, published by Basic Books. He joins us from our NPR studios in Washington. Welcome to the program, David Lindley.
Good afternoon. I'm still awake.
So far, we're ahead of the game. Dr. Lederman, did you hear our little bedtime story?
That was wonderful.
Was it an accurate representation of the standard model?
I wish all the kids were like that. not exactly, but it was a good first pass. The best way I can put it is the malignancy, there's a sickness in the standard model. It's powerful. It's so powerful, it explains the data coming out of all the accelerators since that nearly vertical accelerator in Pisa, the Leaning Tower.
Uh-huh.
Galileo leaned over and dropped rocks. All the data from all the accelerators is handily summarized by the Standard Model. So you say, that's good, that's great, that's a wonderful theory. Why do you want to spend all this money on a new machine? Well, of course, the model itself cries out for a simpler unifying picture, but it's more than that. If we try to predict the simplest kind of experiments to be carried out at energies which are roughly 10 times higher than that at Fermilab, which is the design of the supercollider, the theory breaks down completely. It's embarrassing. It predicts nonsense. It predicts numbers that don't exist. We know that the theory is incorrect when applied to the higher energies. And that's a signal that tells us that we're leaving something important out of our standard model. Our standard model is not complete. Mm-hmm. It's not mathematically consistent. And that's really the drive for the supercollider, which is twofold, to fill up that, find the missing ingredient, and simplify the whole picture. And, of course, there are ideas as to why you can do both and get a double whammy from the supercollider, namely do both things at the same time. And those involve the unified theories.
David Lindley, you argue in your book that finding such a theory of everything will never be found, that it's a sort of a futile effort to do that.
Well, I don't think it's become a futile effort yet, but I think it's nearing that point. And the problem, Dr. Lederman has been talking about, is the history of these experimental searches for new particles, the quarks and the different kinds of leptons, and now we're looking for the top quark, and everyone's pretty confident we'll find it. The kind of unified theory that people are talking about, I mean, these are the ultra-theoretical physicists who inhabit places like Princeton and both Cambridges and so on, they're talking about theories which really exist in a world totally removed from the kind of experimental world you can access either at Fermilab or even at SSC, assuming it's built. The sort of energies you need to test the ideas that are currently being put around in the journals, trillions of times higher than anything that even the SSC can achieve. And while I certainly think it's a good idea to look as hard as you can at the particles that exist around you and to make the most complete theory that you can of their properties, what worries me is that there's a huge gulf which has opened up between what experimental physicists are doing in particle physics and what theoretical physicists are predicting. And finding the top quark and finding some other things that would assure you that, to mend the malignancy that Dr. Lederman was talking about, that's certainly a laudable thing to do. But in terms of getting to a unified theory, it's just not that far. It's like, if you're traveling from New York to Los Angeles, then building the SSE gets you as far as the George Washington Bridge. And there's a whole lot further to go than that.
Dr. Lederman, what do you do after you've built the SSE and have to go to a higher energy? You just have to build a bigger machine?
Well,
you keep going building bigger and bigger machines?
If history is a guide, you may want to build a bigger machine. I don't know to the answer to that, but I think there's something new which is apparent over the last 10 or 20 years. Before that, we would build big machines, certainly starting in the 1950s, and we would be asked by the funders, the congressmen, and so on, is this the biggest machine, and will you want a bigger one? And we would say, well, probably, hesitantly, but we wouldn't know. And it looked like an endless frontier. But there is a new thing, and that is the marriage of particle physics and cosmology, which has been growing in our realization, so much so that here in this particle physics laboratory at Fermilab, we have a very active, very strong astrophysics group institutionalizing this new conversation. And the reason is that cosmologists are convinced that they have their own standard model, and their standard model in the origin of the universe is that the universe began in the Big Bang some 16 billion years ago. And then they have the job of modeling the evolution of the universe from that time to the present, and then to predict. We all have morbid curiosity as to how it will come out at the end. That's their job. And in the beginning, if the Big Bang model is correct, and I think there's a wide consensus that it more or less is correct, all of the matter in the presently observed universe, and even much more, was collapsed into a volume incredibly tiny, incredibly hot, incredibly dense. You run out of super words to describe this. But in this tiny cosmos, it's so hot that matter is decomposed into its most primitive components. So at some phase, those components are presumably the quarks and the leptons that we talked about. And so you have these quarks smashing into each other with energies, as Dr. Lindley said, vastly higher than anything we could get out of Congress. You know, millions of times larger than the super collider, smashing into these into them and creating new matter, which creates energy, which creates matter, and so on. And they're trying to model this.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. You're listening to a Radio Rewind. This is a story we did 20 years ago this month in October with David Lindley and Leon Lederman talking about building the superconducting super collider, which was still being talked about 20 years ago. And let's hear the rest of that.
So why do you need super colliders if you can look at what's happening?
The trouble is it's a limited look, but it is the great accelerator in the sky, and we're getting data from it. Wonderful data is coming out of the marvelous experiments that are going up in these instrumented observatories like the COBE infrared and the X-ray machines and the ground-based observers too. We're getting tremendous data from this big accelerator in the sky. And so in some sense, what we have is no longer an open-ended frontier. We have Fermilab, which is these machines. You could look at this as a time machine, if you like. And Fermilab is groveling at the level of the way the universe behaved, you know, 10 to the minus 16 seconds, which is, I hate to say, a billionth of a billionth of a billionth because it's meaningless, but some tiny fraction of a second after creation. The super collider will bring us closer, a bit closer, maybe 10 to the minus 18 seconds. That's a 1 followed by 18 zeros in the denominator to the Big Bang. And so there's data from the origin. So it's a gap, really, than an endless frontier. And the hope is it may be very difficult. It may be that within that gap there's a tremendous amount of phenomenon that we have no inkling about. And the question is, how close do we have to get to the origin before some brilliant theorist, maybe now being turned off by a first-grade teacher in a school in Chicago, maybe someone will be able to write down a theory which predicts correctly the origin and evolution of the universe and gives as its byproduct the Standard Model.
That's Leon Lederman, Dr. Leon Lederman, who was the head of Fermilab for many, many years. He was a very great popularizer of science and physics. He won the Nobel Prize in physics. Talking with David Lindley, he's also an author and physicist. Talking about the super collider, that was 20 years ago, about this week, 20 years ago in 1993. There was a great effort to try to get Congress to invest in the super collider. It was started out, I think, they said it would cost about $4 billion, and the final price was over $10 billion. And at that price, the super collider was getting a little bit too pricey for anybody to afford. And so Congress, within two weeks of that broadcast, 20 years ago, Congress killed the funding for the super collider, and it was never built. And instead, we went to the Large Hadron Collider and the particles that started to come out of that. And in fact, the super collider would have been larger than the Large Hadron Collider had it been built, but it never was. And that's the story, the bedtime story this week. That's about all the time we have today. Our executive producer of Science Friday Initiative is Daniel Dana. Our SciArts producer is Annie Minoff. Video producer is Lou Grotzkin. Julie Laback is our managing editor for online. Ariel Zitch is our education manager. Christian Scotta, our director of marketing and communications. Our grants manager is Jennifer Fennick. Development associate Annie Nero. Our bookkeeper is Jennifer Quack. And our office coordinator is Betty Fogel. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.